So this morning, we did some practice, and then I talked a little bit, quite generally, about spiritual receptivity and just sitting, which is the practice, in inverted commas, that's associated with spiritual receptivity. I mentioned that there are different levels of practice of just sitting, from just settling to just savoring, just at the end of some kind of practice, you sit with the effects, you sit with the results, you really soak, let that soak into you, permeate your being. And then there's just sitting as a kind of practice where we're taking as our meditation object whatever is happening in the six senses right now. And being aware of that. So this very open style of practice. And then there's just sitting which is just deep spiritual experience, where there's no self-reference going on. There's maybe even no subject-object duality being imposed on experience. There's just an aware flow of experience. That would be just sitting in the final sense. So as usual on these retreats, we've got some people who have been practicing for who knows how long, and then some people who are relatively new, and quite a lot of people who've been on an awful lot of retreats that I've done over the years, and some people who haven't. So this afternoon I'm just going to carry on sort of, in a way, filling in some basic things which might be helpful. But they might be helpful for all of us. They might be helpful for me, because sort of like going back to square one is always a good thing to do. In a way, everything is in square one if you just unpack it deeply enough. So where should we start? Yeah, so I also mentioned this morning that the last time I did a retreat like this, we worked very systematically around the mandala, with just sitting, supported by integration practice, supported by positive emotion practice, and so on. And we're not doing that this time, but still there is that sort of natural movement. On a retreat, you tend to start with gathering your energy, integrating, getting in touch with your feelings, getting in touch with your heart, getting in touch with deeper motivation, and so on. So this afternoon, what should we do? Yes, I'd like to, maybe it's worth just going back to motivation a little bit, just for right back to square one. I led a retreat at Rivendell quite recently on the Four Immeasurables. And at some point in the retreat, I started thinking, well, okay, so we do metta bhavana, karuna bhavana, mudita bhavana, upeksha bhavana. So what is the shraddha bhavana? Shraddha is is metta, as it were, in relation to the ideal. This what moves us on the path. And if shraddha is the beginning of the path, then that's the really crucial thing. You know, shraddha is the beginning of the spiral path, which means it's the beginning of the Buddhist path. Yes, I was asking around on the retreat, what would you say was a shraddha bhavana? And some people were saying puja, that sort of practice. And I wasn't entirely convinced by that, because I think that puja is a... Puja sort of strengthens shraddha when you already have enough shraddha to do puja, if you see what I mean. And in Know Your Mind, Bhante talks about devotion as if you like, a step on beyond shraddha. It's almost like an expression of some shraddha which is already there. So yes, if you already have a certain amount of faith, then doing that kind of practice, whether it's puja or visualization or whatever it might be, will deepen it. But we're not quite at the beginning yet, are we? Some people suggested Dharma study, which I did buy, because that is a way of, you know, hammering out what you really think and feel, and bringing who you are in relation to what's inspiring and the Buddha's teaching. So that can be a kind of shraddha bhavana. I suppose where I came out of our discussions, or what I came out of our discussions with, wasn't so much about what you would do, because you can do different things. You can read inspiring biographies of practitioners. You can read Dharma, you can meet inspiring people. You can, you know, practice in various ways to find shraddha. But I suppose what I really came away with is just how crucial it is to kind of know what the level of your current faith and confidence is. You know, it's almost like I've got kind of motivation, faith and confidence all kind of in one area. They're very sort of interlinked for me. So it's almost like what it made me do, one of the things it made me do, was be aware of how, almost as a practice through the day, I could sort of check my sort of motivation meter and notice, you know, how it was. And certainly coming on a retreat like this, I find it really helpful just to check, you know, what my level of motivation is. How is it? How's my confidence in myself as a Dharma practitioner? How's my confidence in the Dharma? And to keep sort of feeding that. And where there are issues, whether I've got doubts, I've got questions, to really go into those and try and resolve those as much as possible. Because what I've seen myself do sometimes over the years, and what I see other people doing, is they've got a reasonable level of motivation, faith, confidence in the Dharma, enough to be practicing, but not enough to really kind of power them along. So when they encounter difficulties, often the response is to sort of try harder and to put more effort in, rather than to go back and deepen the motivation and really resolve areas which nibble away at, which take away your confidence. Because if you're really motivated, if you're really, really strongly motivated, usually you don't feel like you're making any effort. You don't feel like you've got to try harder. You know, if you're tremendously motivated to do something, you just do it. It just happens, because that's what you're going to do. So I found it quite useful just to really put almost, very centrally in my practice, just noticing how my motivation was. Because if that's the beginning of the path, then it's almost like you keep feeding that, and the further stages get a lot easier. So yeah, maybe it's not a bad thing to just go back to square one and just rummage around, look around a bit, and see, well, how is our motivation, and to really appreciate what's there. And I find personally, I both appreciate it and I feel tremendous gratitude for all those people and who in different ways have supported me in finding the confidence that I do have in the Dharma. And that's from the Buddha down, all those people who've kept the Dharma alive for 2,500 years, to Bante and all sorts of order members and all kinds of situations, and yeah, all kinds of people in different ways who've all, through my connections with them, my contact with them, through watching how they've lived their lives, through watching them go through their struggles, yeah, through them in all kinds of ways, strengthening that basic kind of confidence that in, this is what I'm doing with my life, and I'm really pleased that I'm doing it. So there's, yeah, there's a great sort of gratitude in there as well. So it's good to kind of really appreciate and not take for granted, you know, the fact that we have found the Dharma and we are practicing it, and we've got ourselves to Adishtana on a retreat like this. You know, yeah, something has really motivated us to do that, and that needs celebrating, because whatever we celebrate in ourselves grows. But then it's also good to just notice those things which undercut that confidence, or sort of, yeah, just nibble away the edges of it, and not to kind of ignore those, but to, where possible, really kind of go into them and resolve them. It's like very often you can spend long times, years sometimes, with some sort of issue which you just treat as a hindrance in meditation. You know, there's this little voice going, oh, well, you can't really do this, or whatever it is. And you just say, go away, go, no, sort of, yeah, I can do this. But it keeps coming back. And anything like that which keeps coming back, you need to sort out. Yeah? You need to have a, you know, get into, you know, get it out, you know, get it, stand in the middle of the room and tell you why you can't practice, you know, give it all the reasons and see whether that's right or not. Because if it is, we're wasting our time and money, in fact, on being on a retreat. Yeah. But if it's not right, then that we need to, you know, get that through to that part of ourselves so that we bring more of that energy onto the path with us. Yeah. So one of the things that's good to do at the beginning of a retreat is just to kind of take stock a little bit. Yeah. Take stock of, really appreciate the fact that, yeah, we're, a lot of us is behind the Dharma, and that's what's brought us here. And isn't that fantastic? Isn't that magnificent out of all the billions of people on the planet who are doing whatever they're doing with their lives? Yeah, and to, yeah, appreciate all those who've helped us to develop that. But also, yeah, to notice those little voices or those little things which just sort of take the energy out of our motivation. Yeah, so what would be a Shraddha Bhavana for us? Maybe that's the question. So the another thing that I'd just like to put in place relatively quickly is relaxation and awareness. This is you would have found at the door. A transcript of one of the very few times where I think Bhante has really gone into just sitting on the Rinchenpo's repentance seminar, and he's commenting on some lines which say, do not bestir yourself with many things. So don't busy yourself, don't keep rushing around with many things, but relax and sit at ease. And out of that, Bhante starts talking about the relaxing and sitting at ease that Milarepa is talking about. which he describes as its complete, total psychophysical or spiritual come psychophysical relaxation. A complete absence of strain of any sort, like a complete spontaneity and naturalness of the deepest, or if you like, the highest level. And later on in the quote, he talks about existential relaxation. And in a way, that's kind of the direction that we're going in with just sitting. Yes, you can work on relaxing, you know, relax your shoulders, relax the chest, relax the stomach. You can work on relaxing emotions and so on. But finally, we're aiming to relax out of the whole, what I sometimes call ego project. We're aiming to relax out of any kind of self-concern. In a way, where the path ends up is with a self-forgetting. And we'll go into this more in coming days. But to start with, it's good if we can find within our practice a state that's both relaxed and aware. And often when I talk about this, I talk about how in modern life you tend to get one or the other. So you get a kind of hyper-vigilant awareness. You do one thing and then, okay, straight away, well, what's the next thing to do? And then what do I do now? And you never quite feel that you can, you know, give yourself breathing space in the course of a day. At least a lot of people in the 21st century are like this. And so you get to the end of the day, and then finally, having been, you know, hyper aware all day, you then drop into relaxation, but it's a relaxation which is just complete sort of slump in front of the screen, or slump in front of a movie or something. So you go between sort of, you know, you from sort of this sort of trying too hard, you know, very, very hyper sort of flat, 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 and then flop, flop, flop. and yeah, that really, you know, is a struggle. And so what we need to do in all practice, and particularly with just sitting, is we need to bring together relaxation and awareness. Yeah. So there's the relaxation relaxes all that kind of hypervigilance. So we learn to be with the experience of sounds and sights and feelings in the body and so on, but just letting them be without being overly vigilant about them. Again, we'll explore this more. But then the relaxation maintains awareness. It's not just dropping into a semi-conscious state. And so we're learning to have awareness and relaxation in one experience. And if we can really get the feeling of that, if we can get the taste of that, that will be really helpful. And there's one way of practicing with the breathing which does help this. I don't know what you'd call it. In English, it's sometimes called belly breathing. In Tibetan, it's ba lung. Bar is B-A-R is the same word as in bardo, so it means sort of between, sort of in the middle. And lung means lung. is a bit like sort of prana in Sanskrit. So it's a word for the breathing, although it can even be very sort of, it can also be a word for very subtle kind of energy. So this Ba Lung is focusing on the sort of middle area of the body, and it's also somewhere between just letting the breathing be without paying any particular attention to it and doing some kind of pranayama exercise where you're deliberately working the breathing. And so it's a way of practicing. In a way, it's kind of what we do as an antidote sometimes if you're doing the mindfulness of breathing and you're, you know, there's lots of thinking and you just bring your energy down. So you bring your energy down into this area below the navel. And you feel the effects of the breath down here. But also, as well as bringing awareness into this area, you find whatever will help to have a real sense of relaxation as you're breathing in this area. So different things work for different people, but you can have a sense of a bit like, you know, when you're sitting in front of a warm fire in the winter and there's just a sense of ease and just everything, this area is really kind of warm. Some bears do this for people, sort of. Baloo the bear, or even Winnie the Pooh, there's a certain kind of sense of, you know, you've got this kind of comfortable, honey-filled, you know, sort of area here. So you're just kind of breathing into this area, and very sort of gently. And you can use it as a mindfulness anchor during the day, you know, so you could just be sitting around and taking things in, but there's maybe like 15% of your awareness which is just staying down in this area below the navel, and it's just this, you're letting a sense of an imagined sense, maybe to start with, of kind of warmth and ease there just kind of reassure you. It's like this area is giving you a sense of it's okay, everything's all right, you know, just take it easy, you know, just lean against a pillar, nothing to do. Yeah, so you just do that. Or you can, in meditation, you can it can be your meditation object, so to speak. So you're really being full awareness into that area. As with any aspect of our physical experience, some people find, you know, moving their awareness into this area easier than others. But if you find that it works for you, it has a lot of benefits. It does tend to sort of drain away some of that driven thinking that can go on. It is naturally relaxing, and it gathers energy. There are a lot of traditions, sort of yogic and other traditions, where this area below the navel is one where energy is kind of gathered and stored. So it's quite healing. And it's also a very good antidote to anxiety. I think if you really practice this quite regularly and solidly for a few years, and if you tend to anxiety, it would make a real dent in that tendency. And also, those Buddhist traditions which tend to emphasize non-duality, seeing the untrueness of the sense of separation that we create between a sense of me in here and everything else out there, they often also put quite a lot of emphasis on this area. So like in Zen, for instance, there's a lot of emphasis on the hara, which is same thing. So is that clear as a method? And I described it in a way you can get to. Yeah? Okay. Let's do some practice then. So we'll do another guided practice. Quite a lot of the meditation in these morning and afternoon sessions will be guided. But if what I'm saying doesn't work for you, or just tune me out, yeah, feel free to ignore me completely. I won't be upset. So again, we'll start by doing nothing at all. It's a bit like coming into neutral. There's energy there, but we don't have to go anywhere. Out of all the experience that's going on, let's see if we can find the sensations that tell us we're connected to the ground, connected to the earth. not just letting the mind give us a mental map. Feeling as best we can the actual sensations now. Connected maybe with feelings of warmth or pressure, both. So now let's move more into a feeling sense, almost more of an emotional sense. Of being supported by the earth. And letting ourselves relax into that. Just give the earth our weight. As we relax, it's almost as if our weight is all gathered in the lower part of the body. Now bringing awareness up Sense of the spine free and open. So it's as if the lower part of the body is rooted in the earth, and the upper part of the body is light. Connected to the sky. Now let's just take a little time and see if we can move between that relaxed, heavy, rooted lower part of the body, that light aspect of the upper part of the body. So if the upper part of the body is a symbol for awareness, the lower part for relaxation. As if we're bringing them together by moving between the two. We're feeling our way towards the whole body being permeated by a relaxed awareness. So how is it? We need a little more relaxation, a little more awareness. we're not insisting that this has to happen. That wouldn't be very relaxed. So if we're just offering that possibility, we found this relaxed awareness as best we can. Let's spend a little time with the feelings and sensations in the body. Feeling them arise and pass away in this field of relaxed awareness. Because there's awareness there, the feelings and sensations are clearly known. And because there's relaxation there, they're not held on to, they're not pushed away, which means they naturally flow, arising and disappearing. Now, if it feels right to you, for the last few minutes of the meditation, let's first become particularly aware of the breathing, still relaxed awareness. Now let's bring awareness into that area below the navel. Letting it be moved by the breath. Letting that whole area be as relaxed and easy as possible. Letting the tide of the breathing really relax us. But relax us awake rather than relax us to sleep. So now, as we come towards the end, firstly, let's imagine that the bell for the end of the meditation is gone. Just notice if that relaxes you anymore. Now we're just going to take a little time to come out of the meditation. And our aim is to bring as much of that sense of relaxed awareness as possible with us as we come out of the meditation. So we're aiming to come into everyday activity, but without changing gear, without tensing up in order to be in the world. Just letting ourselves be in the world, soft and relaxed, and aware. Awake, knowing what's going on.